Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Gravitate Coworking, a community of entrepreneurs, freelancers, and remote workers who believe that life is better when you work together. Learn more at gravitatecoworking.com/IPR. Gravitate Coworking. Find your tribe.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Recently, a federal judge ruled it's no longer a crime to go undercover at factory farms and other ag-related operations, slaughterhouses, for instance, to investigate working conditions and animal welfare. This hour, we'll talk about that ruling and get reactions from several perspectives. In just a moment, the legal side of things will be explained to us from by Jennifer Zwagerman of Drake's Agricultural Law Center. Also, we'll talk with a former undercover investigator about this, someone who's actually gone in to discover animal welfare issues in a variety of places here in the Midwest. Mike Telford of the Iowa Farm Animal Care will be with us. Also, Kevin Stiles, we'll hear from him of the Iowa Poultry Association. Join our conversation about what is called by opponents the Ag Gag Law. Proponents call it the Ag Protection Law. 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org. Joining us, first of all, Amy Mayer, IPR Ag Reporter, Harvest Public Media. Hi, Amy.
Hi there, Ben.
Remind us quickly, when did this law come into action, and what did it prohibit?
The law was passed in 2012, and what it did is prevented people from seeking a job at a large animal farm, for example, a hog operation or a puppy mill or another place where animals were being cared for. You couldn't get a job like that if your intent was to then use your position from the inside to record and then later share publicly documentation about what was happening at that facility.
Okay, so it's really not a ban on recording video or audio at these places. It is a ban on lying about your application, the reason you're there.
Right. I think it would be a separate question about overall recording. I mean, there would be trespass issues there and whatnot. But this particular law was about activists in particular or animal advocates not misrepresenting themselves to get employment so that they could then use their position for that documentation.
Iowa lawmakers back in 2012 felt the need to do this because there were such cases?
There had been several undercover investigations where someone who had been employed in some cases, in other cases it wasn't an employee, but where someone who was employed by, say, a farm had a video of somebody throwing a piglet, or they had pictures or documents of other mistreatment of animals, such as egg-laying hens, and these were exposed. They generated some amount of response in the public, and the way that the proponents of pork production and eggs and so forth thought they could prevent that kind of negative exposure in the future was to make sure that you couldn't have these types of kind of employees who were not really there for the job being on site to provide this information.
Mm-hmm. With this ruling now a few days old, what can you tell us about the reaction of the agricultural community here in Iowa?
I think there's a general understanding that since 2012, many of the groups involved in animal agriculture have made much more of a concerted effort to put their own messages out there, to provide images and sometimes videos from different barns and different farm operations. I think they'll continue to do that, though certainly there's disappointment that this particular law will no longer be on the books.
Okay, Amy Mayer, IPR Ag Reporter, Harvest Public Media. Amy, thank you so much.
Thanks, Ben.
I want to mention here, too, that from the governor's office, the governor issued a statement through Pat Garrett, the Governor Reynolds spokesperson, that the governor is disappointed in the ruling that struck down what they called bipartisan legislation. We are reviewing options with the attorney general, that from the governor's office. Let's check in with Jennifer Zwagerman, who joined us also not too many days ago to talk about this topic. Associate Director of the Agricultural Law Center at Drake University will be the director of that center starting this summer. Jennifer, welcome back to our studio.
Thank you for the invitation.
We talked a little bit about the background of this law with Amy there. Tell us about this particular case, how it came up, who brought this suit.
There were a number of plaintiffs in this suit, including the Animal Legal Defense fund some organizations focused on puppy breeding, dog breeding, and some other organizations, all who were arguing that the bill itself was preventing them from engaging in the type of investigations that they wanted to do with animal operations in violation of their First Amendment rights. And what the argument was is that the threat of the penalties, the threat of this enforcement of this law was keeping them from starting the process of these investigations.
Mm-hmm. And is there evidence to back that up as a claim?
There was. A majority of them had been involved in these types of operations before. And so the fact that they would continue to engage in those types of operations was not an argument there.
Tell us the decision the judge ruled in this case and the reasoning behind it.
What it really came down to was the First Amendment argument in terms of whether or not applicants to these jobs in the animal operations had the right to essentially lie in applications. And the court said in this case that without more proof of harm, that lying is a protected form of speech, that providing some of this false information, providing or lying about your intent or desire to work on the farm was a protected form of speech. And so the state had to survive strict scrutiny, which is a very intense form of constitutional scrutiny for the law to succeed or to be constitutional. And in that case, there needed to be a compelling state interest. And any attempt to invest in that or to protect that state interest had to be very narrowly tailored, meaning there was no other way to protect or affect that state interest other than what the law was doing. And the court went through a thorough review and basically said that the state failed to meet that high standard in this case, and that the two identified interests, which were biosecurity and protection of private property, while there might be valid interests, there wasn't an indication that the law actually addressed those particular interests, and that the restrictions were not nearly tailored, even if they did meet those interests.
Mm-hmm. The ruling written by James Grisner, the senior judge in the U.S. District Court for the Southern District of Iowa. So what happens now, Jennifer? An appeal, I guess.
Like the governor said, their office is evaluating that. It is very possible. Iowa is not the first state to see this type of law overturned. And we've seen similar activity out west in Idaho and Wyoming and Utah. And the Ninth Circuit has also at least partially overturned Idaho's rule.
Mm-hmm. Does this federal ruling from a federal court located in Iowa, does it have any implications outside of Iowa?
This initial ruling itself, no. Now, if we do get it, if there is an appeal taken up to the Eighth Circuit and a ruling at that level, if perhaps the Eighth Circuit were to affirm or to overturn it, would have broader implications potentially there. But what it really does, if there is an appeal, and depending on the decision there, is to either set up potentially a split in the circuits, where we would have two different circuits potentially with different opinions on how to interpret this level of First Amendment protection when it comes to animal operations, or you may find that the courts are in agreement. If there is a split in the circuits, then I would likely see an appeal from one of those cases up to the Supreme Court, but there's no guarantee that the Supreme Court would take that either.
In the meantime, is this law then no longer the law of this land?
In Iowa, it is not something that would be enforced, correct?
Okay. Jennifer Swagerman is with us from Drake University's Agricultural Law Center. Join our conversation as we talk about what is commonly known as the Ag Gag Law or the Ag Protection Law, depending on which side of the fence you land on this issue. 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. Also joining Jennifer and myself now, Liz Pouchaud is a former undercover ag investigator with Mercy for Animals, that organization. Liz now lives in Seattle, and I believe that's where you're joining us from, right, Liz?
It is. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for having the time for us. You worked in Iowa and in the Midwest when doing undercover investigation?
For almost the entirety of 2011, which was the period where the law was actually being considered but hadn't yet been enacted.
Before we get into your experience as an undercover investigator, what is your reaction to this ruling?
I think it's a great victory for the protection of farm animals as well as the protection of consumers who would like to believe that they can trust the people who are producing their food.
Mm-hmm. When you went into these operations to investigate, how did you get in? Did you lie about your intentions when you applied for these jobs?
No, we never lie. And in fact, it's already pretty well documented that there are protections for employers against employees who lie on job applications. That was never part of our tactic because, frankly, it sullies the integrity of the investigation. So I used my real name. I used my real job history, my real Social Security number. Everything was verifiable. If anyone had done a background check or done some even basic Googling, they could have found out what my background was. And I gained employment through fully legal means, just like anybody else.
Right. But I guess the question is, you did not share your status as an investigator with Mercy for Animals. You didn't put that on the application, and I guess you weren't directly asked about that. You just filled out the application, were not asked any other questions, and so the employer assumed that you just wanted a job.
That's correct.
Okay. Talk about the process you used for going undercover. How did you know where to go, where to look for suspected abuse?
Oftentimes, we find that the abuse that comes out of farms happen at the larger levels. It tends to be a little more powerful for the purpose of consumer protection and animal protection if we can show that the issues are not just happening on the smaller farms but are happening all the way up the chain, and the tone for the abuse is being set by the industry leaders. So in many cases, it's not difficult to find out who the big players are in an industry and often where those abuses are taking place.
You say you worked in Iowa for about a half a year in 2012. What did you find?
I found a lot of really troubling activity at the hog farm that I worked for in the spring and summer. I found young piglets being castrated without any anesthesia. I saw mother pigs dying in their cages from uterine prolapses without any medical attention or care. I saw piglets having their tails cut off with dull shears and a pretty rampant disregard for the welfare and safety of those animals and of the workers in that facility.
How did you collect data? Did you collect video recordings of this?
Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm. And where did you go with that video?
Can you clarify the question?
How did you distribute? Did you distribute the video immediately? What happened? What was the process there?
Oh, I see. The process is that I send the video back to Mercy for Animals, who then immediately turns it over to animal experts, legal experts, and also law enforcement. And that's where the investigation takes hold.
Mm-hmm. And so I suppose there are things that you collected, Liz, that while we may not like, be shocked by, because I guess we probably turn a blind eye to these things, they're things that we might not like but are not illegal. Is that right?
That's correct. What we actually find most often is that the behavior that the public is often most shocked by is actually fully protected by the animal industries themselves through a legal provision that suggests that any behavior that you can point to that is, quote, standard industry practice is protected from cruelty statutes. So oftentimes we find that while we may not like the behavior, there actually isn't a law prohibiting it.
Liz Pouchant is with us, former undercover ag investigator with Mercy for Animals. She worked for several months for years in the Midwest, for 6 months in the spring and summer of 2012, about the time that this ag gag law or the ag protection law was signed into. You remember that being signed into law, Liz?
It was actually actually, sorry, 2011 that I was there, and I remember the debates that were occurring in the legislature before the law was passed. In fact, one day I got in my car after work, and I heard a debate happening on NPR while I was driving home, and I knew that the issue was becoming serious. But I had actually left Iowa by the time the law was enacted.
Can you draw a line between the work that you did, what you documented, and any change for the better for animals?
Oh, absolutely. We always find that after an investigation, there's an uptick in consumer engagement and watchdog activity in general over food safety and animal protection. We also often see that grocery stores, under pressure from consumers, will change their purchasing behaviors in a way that is more aligned with the values of consumers for the protection of animals and food safety.
Mm-hmm. Liz, stay on the line with us. Mike Telford is with us as well, Executive Director of Iowa Farm Animal Care. Mike, welcome to the program.
Ben, it's a pleasure to be here, and good afternoon.
Good afternoon. You've been listening to this entire conversation up to now in our Des Moines studio. Briefly, before you give us your reaction to what's been said, introduce us to your organization, Iowa Farm Animal Care, briefly. What's your mission?
Iowa Farm Animal Care is an organization with the vision that every farm animal in Iowa receives responsible and humane animal care. We promote the responsible and humane care of farm animals by primarily three things, Ben. Number one is we provide the latest information and resources about farm animal care and the latest practices. Two, increasing awareness of how Iowa farmers care for their animals. And in cases where we receive a concerned citizen report, we actually provide voluntary, independent, and professional evaluations of farming operations if that's needed. And obviously on our website, Iowa Farm Animal Care, we go into a great detail on various species. And we also have a toll-free number, 1-800-252-0577, where we will take conversations with concerned citizens on operations, or they can also send us whatever their concern is via our website, whether it's a question or it's a concerned citizen report.
Mm-hmm. Mike, tell us, what is your reaction to this federal judge ruling that says freedom of the press, our First Amendment rights, are above whatever privacy protections agricultural producers may have?
Well, personally, Ben, I believe it was never the intent of producers to infringe on others' First Amendment rights. Family farmers want to know that the folks that who come to work on their farms don't have an ulterior motive. And the main thing that they're looking for is somebody that wants to place that animal care as a top priority. Iowa Farm Animal Care is the answer to the solution. It's not undercover videos from animal activists. And I think that you have to ask, what's the motive behind people who shoot these videos? What is their goal?
Mm-hmm. Well,
and it's certainly not, unfortunately, Ben, it's certainly not animal care. I find it interesting that these are almost always carried out by someone promoting a vegetarian diet, and they think that everybody else should be on that diet.
Mm-hmm. And I assume you're speaking to our other guest, Liz, who just told you about her experiences in Iowa. Mike, is that correct? You would characterize her as this? Perhaps we need a reaction from Liz.
Well, I think Liz has already stated that she's a vegetarian.
Liz, what do you think about Mike's characterization of you and others who have done similar things?
I think that if we're asking about issues of motive, I would suggest that perhaps the billions of dollars being funneled through the animal agriculture industry is perhaps more of a motive to pass legislation for its own protection than the grassroots application of vegetarian principles. We're a nonprofit organization. We're not in it for the glory or the money. However, animal agriculture industries most certainly are, and this is a result of that. Frankly, self-preservation on the part of the industry.
Mm-hmm. Mike Telford, how widespread do you believe the abuse of animals is? We talk about any industry would have some bad actors here. I don't think anybody can deny that. And Iowa Farm Animal Care is sort of self-policing, perhaps misunderstandings, perhaps in some case intentional wrongdoing here. How successful are you at changing practices that do not measure up?
Well, first of all, Ben, as a professional animal scientist and anyone who is involved in animal husbandry, if you want to be successful, you want the animals to be as comfortable and as well cared for as possible. The health and welfare of those animals is the highest priority if you want them to be productive. And there's an extremely high percentage of livestock producers of all species who use the best management practices and protect the health and welfare of animals on their farms. And I can tell you because of, you know, our advisory committee, that there's really very limited cases where we really have issues, and in many cases they're hobby farms, or you really run into a mental health issue, or on the outer edge maybe a financial issue. But we work very closely with the Animal Rescue League and Tom Colvin, Josh Colvin, and his other great staff, including Scott Wilson. We work very closely with the Iowa Sheriffs and Deputies Association so that, you know, if we do see animal abuse, that it can be dealt with and expediently. We also involve the Secretary of Agriculture, the state veterinarian, and I think the real core to our program is we work very closely with, like, Dr. Susan Millman at Iowa State, who is a professor in basically animal care, as well as Dr. Anna Johnson in animal science. And so when we do on-farm evaluations, we go in and basically cover everything from A to Z on what needs to be changed in those operations.
Mm-hmm. Liz Pichot, we have about a minute before we go to break. What do you think of those assurances from Mike Telford of the Iowa Farm Animal Care?
I think if those assurances were actually working, then we wouldn't be seeing what we're seeing on factory farms. I've never gone into a facility and said, you know what, they're doing fine. Everything here is great, and there's no need for us to be here. Unfortunately, it's often the opposite. I believe that the industry themselves are determining what those best practices are for them to adhere to in regards to animal health and husbandry, and it appears in every instance that we find that the fox is really guarding the hen house here and needs a third-party watchdog to hold them accountable.
Liz Pichot is with us and will be with us in the second half hour, former undercover ag investigator with Mercy for Animals, worked in Iowa for months, also in the Midwest. Mike Telford, executive director of Iowa Farm Animal Care, is with us, along with Jennifer Swagerman of the Agricultural Law Center at Drake University. We'll be back in just a moment. We'll also hear from the executive director of the Iowa Poultry Association when we come back, as we talk about a federal judge saying it's no longer a crime to go undercover at factory farms, the ag gag law, as it's known, the ag protection law, struck down by a federal judge. I'm Ben Kiefer. We'll talk more about it after a short break.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Gravitate Coworking, a community of entrepreneurs, freelancers, and remote workers who believe that life is better when you work together. Learn more at gravitatecoworking.com/IPR. Gravitate Coworking. Find your tribe.
Glad to have you on board midstream in this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. We're talking about the ruling by a federal judge in the Southern District of Iowa, U.S. District Court for the Southern District, James Grisner, a few days ago, striking down the Ag Protection Law, or the Ag Gag Law, as it is known, depending on your views on it. Labeling is everything, as we know in a lot of our issues that we deal with. It's a law that said it was a crime for journalists and advocacy groups to go undercover to sort of falsely represent themselves at ag-related operations to investigate work conditions, animal welfare, food safety, environmental hazards, and some other things, to go there under false pretenses. And the judge ruled that our First Amendment rights are above that so that we can, the law is a clear violation of the First Amendment, the judge says, and says lying in misrepresenting yourself is also protected speech. Joining us is Jennifer Swagerman of the Agricultural Law Center at Drake University. Liz Pachaud is a former undercover ag investigator with Mercy for Animals. Mike Telford, executive director of Iowa Farm Animal Care. Let's go to our phones. Laura has been listening and joins a conversation from Des Moines. Laura, what's on your mind?
Yes.
As you listen to this back and forth.
Yeah, thanks, Ben. Well, first of all, I want to make it clear I'm not with PETA. I eat meat, and I love farmers. So I want to make that clear from the get-go. What I don't appreciate is this industrial animal agriculture that basically has been allowed to manipulate the rhetoric of alternative animal-based systems to its advantage. And when I eat meat, I want to know where it comes from. You know, I'm a consumer just like a lot of people out there, and I think more and more people want to know, where is their food coming from? How is it being dealt with? And if the industry, this industrial agricultural industry, doesn't have anything to hide, then they shouldn't be worried. So I want to support the farmers that are out there doing good animal husbandry and, also at the same time helping our environment.
Mm-hmm.
Both those issues go together.
Laura in Des Moines, thank you for those points. Mike Telford, let me ask you for a reaction to Laura's concerns there.
Well, I think that's one of the main roles that we have at Iowa Farm Animal Care. I believe, Ben, that every generation that's further removed from the farm and agriculture and their family deserve to know exactly what's going on in animal and agriculture production. And IFAC is here to provide transparency on how farm animals and food is produced and delivered to consumers. We believe in the ethical and the social responsibility to raise livestock and handle livestock to the highest standards of animal care.
Mm-hmm.
And, this isn't going to look like Grandpa's farm going forward, primarily because of the technology that's been adapted in the industry.
Mm-hmm. Liz Pachaud, our former undercover ag investigator, Laura's very concerned there. She's a meat eater and very concerned and particularly concerned about agriculture like this on an industrial scale. Should she be?
I think Laura makes a great point that consumers are increasingly concerned about the source of their food with every new recall that occurs and every new cruelty violation that we see that comes out. Consumers want to know. They want to know they're doing the right thing. They work hard for the money that they spend on their food, and they don't want to be lied to. I also believe that the industry is probably in a position to evolve here, and instead of doing so, they're choosing to support legislation which keeps consumers in the dark.
Kevin Stiles of the Iowa Poultry Association, he's CEO and executive director of that association, couldn't be with us live on this noon hour, but I did speak with him this morning about the issue. Liz, Mike, and Jennifer, let's listen to this approximately 8 or 9 minute conversation with Kevin Stiles, and then I'd like to get your reaction. Kevin Stiles from this morning, my conversation. Kevin Stiles, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the chance to join.
Kevin, you are CEO and Executive Director of the Iowa Poultry Association. I want to thank you for giving us your views on this. We want to also take note that you were not working at the Iowa Poultry Association when this law was passed in 2012, but the Iowa Poultry Association did lobby for the bill at the Iowa State House. What's the reaction of the Iowa Poultry Association to this latest ruling?
Well, first of all, the Ag Protection Law was created to really all about protecting our farmers and individuals from individuals that might fabricate false claims, with the intent of damaging either their reputation or harming their business. Unfortunately, we're disappointed that the Southern Iowa District Court didn't see it that way, and that's not the way they interpreted it.
Mm-hmm. False claims. What evidence has there been of false claims made by those against ag producers?
Well, we believe there's been numerous false claims that have been given, and it's really our whole point is that we're asking that applicants be honest with their intentions for employment rather than misinforming the employer about why they're being hired.
Mm-hmm. Can you point to a false claim when you say there are many? Can you point to a false claim that may would have been in the news?
I really can't off the top of my head, but I'm familiar with in prior years examples of those false claims being given, and in some cases just misinterpretation of what's happening on the farm.
Expand a little bit on, you mentioned misinterpreting.
Well, I think someone that doesn't regularly work with birds or animals, sometimes when they see just a 2 or 3 second clip, sometimes that practice can be misinterpreted, whereas if they were able to show a longer clip and be able to show more of what was happening throughout the entire process, they might understand better what was being done with the animal.
How can you give an example?
No, I don't think I can at this point in time, but I know there are examples that have been shared in past where activists have shared clips, and it's been misinterpreted often just because they couldn't see the full scope of what was being done with the animal.
Mm-hmm. For instance, before the ag, this ag protection law was put in, was enacted. I mean, one of the clips we saw, hens that lay eggs are needed, but the males that come out of the eggs that are born are not needed. And there was a video of baby chicks, all males, being fed bucket loads of them into a grinder, just disposed of that way. Is that a practice that we just have to accept happens in the poultry industry, however shocked we may be?
So first let me say that all birds are euthanized according to American Veterinary Medical Association approved methods. We continue to look for improved practices in the care and handling of all birds, those in a hatchery and those on the farm. We always are in tune with solutions to make different practices better for the animal and better for the industry.
Mm-hmm. So as to the point of lying on an application, here's what the judge had to say. The federal judge had to say, in these circumstances, he says, his ruling was that lies are protected. And I quote the ruling, to some degree, the concept of constitutional protection for speech that is false may be disquieting. However, he said, the nation knows that one of the costs of the First Amendment is that it protects the speech we detest as well as the speech we embrace. Can you follow that? So even if you're lying, it's protected by free speech.
Again, I guess we would disagree with that. We wouldn't believe that that's the way the law should be interpreted. But obviously, in this case, the judge in the Southern Iowa District Court didn't see it the way we do.
Mm-hmm. How widespread do you believe abuse of animals, the type of abuse that was targeted here by some investigators?
Well, what I can tell you is that care of the flocks is always a priority for our Iowa poultry farmers and our egg producers. Animal abuse is never tolerated, and we have farms that have animal care codes of conduct. They require employees to sign a policy statement saying that they will report any issues with animal mishandling. We ask that, and you know, really, our farms and the livestock community as a whole expect that should any abuse happen, it should be reported immediately.
How often do you, as the Iowa Poultry Association, have a hand in rooting out bad actors? And we know in any industry there are bad actors. Do you catch bad actors?
We don't. We haven't had any instances. We continue to educate our producers on how they can better train employees, you know, to care for their animals, to have safeguards in place to protect the care of the animals, and that for that reason we do have recommendations on signing a policy statement, a code of conduct, and have steps in place so that animal abuse, should it happen, which it rarely does, be reported immediately.
Mm-hmm. The judge in this case, the federal judge, Grisner, cited multiple undercover investigations of Iowa industrial farms, finding workers had thrown pigs against the floor or burned off the beaks of hens without painkillers. Don't we want to know about this abuse, however few you say they may be, and root them out and stop them?
So certainly, again, we really want to make sure that it's understood that the livestock community doesn't tolerate this. We are very much in favor of sound animal welfare practices, animal care practices, and yes, we certainly want to make sure that the animals are treated under the most humane conditions and animal care practices in place.
I guess a question here is for you, as it concerns poultry at the Iowa Poultry Association, what are you proactively doing to assure consumers of poultry, of others, that you are working to rid the industry of abuse?
Really, what we do is rooted in education, to our producers and the members and their employees, helping them understand how they can train other employees and help them understand what practices need to be followed. Fortunately, we have high-quality employees engaged on the farms. They've participated in animal husbandry courses, whether it be in college or technical schools, and so we work and partner with others to help, develop improved animal care practices and hope that their employees engage in that.
Kevin Stiles, CEO and Executive Director of the Iowa Poultry Association, we appreciate you coming on the program today.
Thank you. And again, I want to make sure you understand that while we're disappointed in the ruling, Iowa poultry farmers will continue to take proper care of their flocks and work to enhance their employee training, their animal care practices, and it's all about the well-being of the birds that we raise.
That conversation with Kevin Stiles from earlier this morning. Again, if you just tuned in, we're talking about a federal judge saying it's no longer a crime in Iowa to go undercover at factory farms, slaughterhouses, other ag-related operations. He said the 2012 law here in Iowa is a clear violation of the First Amendment. Back to live conversation, Liz Pichaud there. What did you hear there that you might take issue with? He mentioned at the start that animal activists, welfare activists such as yourself, might be fabricating false claims, and that's why this law was needed.
Well, actually, Kevin says it himself that the law was intended to, quote, protect our farmers from investigators, not actually protect the health of animals or consumers, which I think gives you a pretty good sense of the tenor of the law as it was written. In a regard to what he characterizes as potential misinterpretation of footage, we collect hundreds of hours of footage while we're in these facilities, and we, as a rule, only release what we know to be defensible as business as usual on these farms. It actually defeats the integrity of the investigation to release footage that cannot be easily contextualized, even if it is maybe salacious or shocking to the public.
Mike Telford, you've expressed your disapproval of the approach of Liz Pichaud and others like her. What would you rather have people do to more effectively root out abuse of animals in other situations?
Well, once again, I think, Ben, the critical part is that people report that, and that's one of the reasons that we set up Iowa Farm Animal Care. All the calls that I take from concerned citizens, those reports are kept confidential. We don't reveal who's calling. But we do follow up on what their claims are, not only from a standpoint of the producers, but...
Shouldn't we be skeptical, though, from a person on the inside of the industry like Iowa Farm Animal Care policing itself?
Well, we're not, you know, we're not the inside of the industry. I mean, we're involved with the Animal Rescue League, the Iowa Sheriffs and Deputies mm-hmm. Association, you know, and the folks at Iowa State. And, you know, it really comes down to how are you going to get animal care if you do have an operation that is, quote, not up to steam. And doing an undercover video isn't going to take care of animal care. You need to go in and remediate those situations when they're found. And just shooting a video and putting it on the internet someplace later does not address animal care.
Jennifer Zwagerman of the Agricultural Law Center at Drake University, we haven't heard from you for several minutes. Can we look to perhaps other states when we hear this discussion and the disagreements between Liz and Mike and others, Kevin there? Is there a solution? Have other states found compromises, a better way to work?
I don't know that anyone has found a solution, but I think this highlights a debate that's going on throughout the entire agricultural industry when it comes to consumer interest in food and transparency and all of the aspects that come along with that. I think it's important to note, though, that the judge drew some distinctions here and that it's not that all lying is prohibited. It's just for lying to be considered or to not be protected by the First Amendment, it has to cause significant harm. And there's no guarantee that any trivial claims, that I really want to work here, this is, you know, I really love working with animals, without some other substantive harm, causes something that can't be protected. You know, the other thing to look at is what he's saying is that agricultural operations aren't getting any other different treatment than other businesses. They still have protections when it comes to trespass, when it comes to fraud, if there is any sort of identity theft being used. And if employers, whether they're hired legitimately or for an investigative purpose, are accessing records inappropriately, are accessing aspects of an operation that they shouldn't be in based on their job, there's still ways that employers can protect themselves after the fact as well.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, the agricultural operations here, the basis is they're not going to receive a different level of protection in this way than other types of businesses.
And this law from 2012, which was struck down, did offer them a higher protection than any other sorts of industries?
In many instances, yes. And there are some states that have tried more of a general whistleblower statute in terms of North Carolina and Arkansas have laws that just impose civil penalties, no criminal penalties, on anyone who goes into a business and without permission takes video or photos or anything like that. And North Carolina is currently in litigation now over that law, and I would suspect we'll see Arkansas as well, too.
Mm-hmm. Mike Telford, what do you think of what Jennifer said there about action elsewhere in the country and the fact that that the ag industry, with this law, had higher protection? Why should it have higher protection than any other sort of industry?
Well, you know, Ben, it's one of those things. Any industry, regardless of the profession, you know, we could talk about professors in colleges or lawyers in government positions or school administrators or realtors. I mean, you're going to find bad actors. I think the important part is that when you do, they should be called out. And that's
right.
Essentially...
But why should the ag community have more protections for its industry than any other industry? I guess that is the question.
Well, I think that the main thing is transparency from the standpoint that this is how animals are produced.
Hmm. Okay, we're finishing up our conversation here. Liz Pichaud, thank you for joining us from Seattle. Anything from your end that didn't get mentioned?
I think I would just like to point out again that it's not that we're finding abuse isn't happening, it's that the industry is continuing to be allowed to define what constitutes abuse, and that's where we're seeing these violations occur and where we'd like to correct business as usual moving forward.
Mm-hmm. And Mike Telford, a last word from you?
Well, once again, you know, professional animal scientists use best management practices, and obviously they want to be profitable in these ventures, Ben, and because of that, animal care and their comfort and their health and well-being is the only way that you can be successful.
Jennifer Zwagerman, the last word from you as to where this issue will go in the future.
Well, I think that there's a long road ahead for any of these laws out there to succeed. But I think it's important for any agricultural employer to really take a look at their hiring and training practices now to make sure that they are conducting the background checks of all employees, that they have good training in place when the job market is tight, as it is now in terms of low employment. There may be turnover. And to try and avoid situations, they need to have good practices in place from the start. And I think any state with this type of law is going to see a challenge in the future moving ahead.
Jennifer Swagerman of the Agricultural Law Center at Drake University, thank you for joining us. Also, thanks to Liz Pichaud from Seattle, former undercover ag investigator with Mercy for Animals, and Mike Telford, executive director of Iowa Farm Animal Care. Thank you all for joining us in this discussion.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Coming up in tomorrow's program, our News Buzz edition, Katerina Sestarek will give us the word on the condition of the judiciary address. Also, we'll talk with several ag people about how the shutdown is affecting them and the impact on farmers of Steve King coming off the Ag Committee in the U.S. House. I'm Ben Kiefer. It's River to River. Hope you'll tune in again tomorrow.